Good morning, everyone. This is Johnny Tan, author of From My Mama's Kitchen, Food for the Soul Recipes for Living. Welcome to my weekly From My Mama's Kitchen Talk radio show. With me this morning is Jill Zarin, one of the Real Housewives of New York City. Her award-winning radio host sister, Lisa Wexler, and their mom, Gloria Common. Together, these ladies have written a book titled Secrets of a Jewish Mother, Real Advice, Real Stories, Real Love. Having read this book, I have to say we're all in for a treat this morning.
Anyway, I do want to welcome you ladies to From My Mama's Kitchen Talk radio show, and I enjoyed reading your book. It reminded me a lot about all the wisdom that my nine moms had shared with me over the years. And your book, actually, what it does is that it brought up a lot of things about how to be better self, resulting in a better family, which I like about that. So that's the fascinating part about this whole
thing.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
So, Jill, what inspired all of you to write this book?
What inspired the book was, on The Real Housewives, my mom, came off as, which she is, a very loving, wonderful woman who offers a lot of advice. And my sister came up with the idea. I wanted to write a book. I didn't want to do it alone. I'm kind of a group player. That's one of the reasons why I did the show. I like being in a group. And,
right.
So my sister came up with this great idea to write a book about, you know, basically our lives and the advice my mom has given us over the years that we've grown up.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what inspired it.
And Gloria, let's start out with you because you are the head of this group in a way. So tell us a little bit about yourself growing up during your time, your generation, and how, as it being a mother now, which we will get this sort of a
you have about a day and a half to listen to her.
Go ahead.
The truth is, it's a different world.
Mm-hmm.
You're talking about a whole different time. And as each day goes by, frankly, I begin to think that we're retreating more and more into the 15th or 18th century. Times were just different. We were safer. Everything was black and white, literally. There were no gray lines. Nothing was gray. Everything was, doesn't mean it was right. It
right.
just meant you knew exactly what side of the street you were on.
Right.
Now you're all over the place, in the gutter, in the street, around the corner, in the sewer, whatever. There were definite lines drawn. There were definite morals drawn. There were definite terrible things that were happening. Don't get me wrong. A lot of this stuff was bad.
Mm-hmm.
But we lived in a different kind with a different set of rules. We didn't have computers. We learned everything in school. I think a lot of this stuff now is improved, and I think a lot of it has been taken away.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think anybody can devise a system where you have it all, and we've lost or going to lose.
My mother is so right on.
Do you know that in the county of Palm Beach, as of this September, they stopped spelling as part of the English vocabulary? They're not going to use spelling anymore. They figured the computer will spell for you, so why do they need it?
No,
I couldn't believe it.
Twitter.
No, I thought the mother was kidding me. I couldn't believe it.
Twitter, you're not supposed to spell in full words anyway because you only have 140 characters.
There won't be spelling anymore.
Yet.
So
no,
you
irony,
will be you, and I will be R.
The irony is that my mother was a shorthand teacher, and
uh-huh.
the irony is that people now speak in shorthand between texting and Twitter. That's what we do.
I can't deal with it. I find it so difficult.
But they stopped teaching shorthand in the schools. My mother's job was literally, you know,
wiped out. Yeah,
and,
obliterated.
Obliterated, and now shorthand is probably more valuable than ever. So there you go.
Very
and
true,
the truth is, if you think about it, Johnny, if you really think
yeah.
about it, you cannot go into one store or one bank in this country anymore if the computer is down.
That's
now look
correct.
How awesome that they can't add and they can't subtract. How are you going to get out of it? How are you going to get out of a food store, a clothing
That's
store,
correct.
A bank?
You
the whole
shut
world
out.
Now. So it's a different time. Our education system, I think, was better. It
mm-hmm.
may have been simpler, may
mm-hmm.
not have been as dramatic, but
right.
I think people knew individually more about whatever it is. We read better. We understood math better. Now everything is calculators and computers and done for us, and you have a lot of lazy minds.
Mm-hmm.
You have people who are counting on technology to do the thinking for them. And this, to me, is the most dangerous thing of all.
Very true.
I rest my case. Now you can ask my case.
Well, Jill, what are your thoughts about it, being that, you know, you have to do
you know what I'm doing? You know what I'm doing right now? You know what I'm doing exactly what my mother said? I'm multitasking. I'm going on Facebook and Twitter and telling everybody that this show got rescheduled and that it'll be, you know, added at a later date. So I'm half listening and I'm half typing.
It's like
terrible.
A nightmare. It's a nightmare.
I have to tell everybody not to go, not, you know, that it's not going to be on.
That's
the show was rescheduled.
You see, that is that is an acquired skill, and you have that, and so it's
as
quite...
I'm literally typing and talking and listening.
God.
Well,
nice.
Lisa, how about
yes.
you? Because I think you are a little bit more conservative comparatively to Jill, so to speak.
Very much so.
From the book and everything else, and I really enjoyed it. And I told your mom I really enjoyed reading the book because it's something very, very different, and it's a wonderful flavor because you guys brought... three different flavors to it. And I think that's very, very interesting because it really reflects the personality of you ladies. And that's wonderful.
Well, we wanted that. That was what we were aiming for in the book. So I'm glad we were able to convey that. That's good. That's wonderful.
So Lisa, tell us a little bit about growing up with your family and your sister.
Well, so now everybody is a product of their time. So mommy was a product of, let's say, the World War II, post-Depression, sort of still in the Depression, World War II, coming of age. And I was a product of just after the 60s excitement, although I remember it very distinctly. I remember the day Martin Luther King got shot. I remember the day Robert Kennedy got shot. I don't remember the day JFK got shot because I was only 3 years old. But
I remember when Reagan got shot.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Okay. That was that was in the 80s already. But
right.
I'm a lot younger than my sister.
Yeah, a lot. Yeah, a lot.
By the
sure.
day.
Keep
I'm
saying it.
Younger
honey.
By the day.
Keep saying
a lot younger. I'm much, much younger.
But you know, in terms of being a product of my time, I just remember that, and we wrote about this in our introduction, that if you remember the television show The Wonder Years,
yes.
that encapsulated the suburban 60s bicycle riding, playing after school.
Mm-hmm.
But very also still very safe
mm-hmm.
World that we felt that we grew up in, and not, frankly, a world that was terribly materialistic. You know, one of the things that I find to be extraordinarily different with my children today
mm-hmm.
is that they actually have an awareness, excuse me, that's both my dog and my doorbell at the same time. but they haven't, I'm going
to
have to get it, hold on a minute.
Sure.
It's okay.
The dog takes precedence, Johnny. There's nobody like her little dog.
Hey,
she's a Bichon, and she's the best.
You
well,
see, this show is what it's all about because it is from my mama's kitchen. It's casual conversation at the kitchen table and having a wonderful time.
I so apologize. Could you imagine? I really am sorry. But if I hadn't gotten the door, she would have continued to bark. Anyway, the only thing I wanted to say, of course, I've lost my train of thought, is essentially that, you know, we grew up, it was like Wonder Years, and we were a product of our environment, and what my children find that I find so different today is that we never really cared about or asked, what did your parents do for a living?
Mm-hmm.
And we really never took any sort of notice, unless somebody was an unusually wealthy person living in a mansion, somebody's house didn't really make an impression on us.
Mm-hmm.
But I find that my children have grown up, and they grew up in the 90s and in the last
mm-hmm.
10 years, so conscious of materialism, so
mm-hmm.
conscious of what people have and what mm-hmm. they do for a living and how much money they make. And
mm-hmm.
that really was not the values that I absorbed growing up, and I find that to be really appalling and sort of gross. And, but I think that that's America today. I do.
Well, what you have is that different generations have different flavors about things. And, of
yeah.
course, society created that, though.
I know.
Unfortunately.
Yeah. But, I mean, that to me is a big difference. And that's a big difference in our values as a society. Big one.
Well, Jill?
Yes.
What's your take?
Money is definitely more important in people's minds today. And also there's a big difference, I think, in what people have than they did. There's like no less of a middle class than there was when we grew up. When we grew up, the majority was middle class. And today, I feel like it's more towards the edges, up and down.
What
is
the pursuit of happiness then?
Well, that's a really good question. Right. That's really what is the pursuit of happiness?
I think it's different for everybody. I do. I think it's very different for everybody.
How about for you?
Oh, for me, it's family.
Yeah.
That's the easiest answer I can give you is relationship. When my relationships are good, I'm happy. When my relationships aren't good, I'm not. Very simple. It's not about what I have. That doesn't make me happy. I mean, some things do make me happy, I won't lie. There are things that make me happy, but only momentarily happy. What really makes me happy are my relationships. or unhappy.
Relationships, okay. Well, Lisa, you had a wonderful relationship, and you talk about that relationship in your book about having a friend for over 30 years. Tell us a little bit about that, because I think that's very, very important, because you guys started out the book with the first chapter about friendship, and people sometimes don't realize that friendship is very, very important in our life.
Oh, yeah. I think it's, the color. I think it's the color. I think it's, yeah. So I have this very dear friend. Her name is Sandy, and she became my friend on the first day of going to college. I saw her in my, I lived in an all-girls dorm, one of the two still left at that time on campus, and she was the door next door to mine, and she was officially exotic because she was from a missionary family. And I'm like, missionary, isn't that African queen? Like, what is a missionary family? I mean, it was so exotic to me. I didn't know people were still missionaries in this day and age. Mm-hmm. But she actually grew up in a missionary family. Her father was a Baptist pastor, and she grew up all over Mexico, settling mostly in Guadalajara after Mazatlan. And we used to speak Spanish to each other, but she was an American citizen. Parents were from Texas. Just a fascinating different background than mine. And she was sort of hippie-esque, and she actually took off the second year at Hopkins. She took off to live in Israel. She got there before I did. She lived in a kibbutz in Israel. She lived at Francis Schaeffer's Libri Retreat.
I didn't know that.
Yes, she lived. And then she lived at Francis Schaeffer's Libri Retreat in Switzerland, which was a very famous Christian retreat. She lived there for 5 months. She backpacked all over Europe. She came back and got married. And she still graduated with me in 4 years. I still don't know how she did.
I don't believe, you know, Lisa, I know her how many years, and I never heard anything like this.
Oh, she was officially exotic in every way, a philosopher, a thinker, and I adore her. She's still my best friend 30 years later. She's my best friend. And she's had a rather sad life because her husband died very suddenly.
Terrible.
And she adopted these two children, and they've had their problems. And
this is where you wonder where there's a God.
Right.
Honestly. No, honestly, you say if you do the right thing and you go to church and you pray and you don't have a bad word to say about anybody, you live a clean life, that life is going to be good to you. That's not true.
That's not always true, and that's unfortunately. And if she didn't have her faith, though, she thinks she would have, you know, gone off the deep end a long time ago because her faith is what sustains her.
Right.
But still in all, it doesn't seem fair.
Thing. I was just saying that it's not fair. Right.
It's not fair. No, terribly not fair.
Well,
she's still my best friend, and we've had our arguments. We have arguments about politics and, you know, abortion rights and all kinds of things.
Mm-hmm,
and then we put it away, and we realize we're still best friends, you know?
To me, there's an underlying current or factor in there because it's all about unconditional love. Because
that's
when you connect with one person and from a spiritual side, then we're all connected. We all understand. We don't necessarily have to agree, but we respect one's point of view. So I think that makes a big difference, I think, when you tie all that in. Now,
frankly, may I interrupt and say that's sadly lacking, and that's one of the reasons we are in such terrible trouble in this country. The words that you just said, taken to the next level, which is politics, is so sadly lacking now in this country. We are so whipped up and hateful to each other that it's really, it boggles the mind. Maybe I was just naive when I was a kid. Or maybe we didn't have TV and instant, and everything is instant. But the truth of the matter is I've never seen such divisiveness and
I'll tell
anger.
You something. It's gone to the social level. It's in politics, and now it's cyberbullying.
Right.
And, you know, and now these forums that were supposed to be exchanges of decent civil communication have become places where there's just hatred, under the name of First Amendment. People say vicious things under fake names. And look what happens. Kids commit suicide. So, you know, with every wonderful advance in technology, there's a downside, and we've got to control our impulses. Really, we do.
And there's also a breakdown in the values at home, which actually the parents lead in this case, because we are living in the world of me, versus the world of us. Jill, tell us about your golden rules of friendship, because you had that in your book, and I thought it was very, very interesting. Very pragmatic, very practical, direct to the point.
Well, it's be there, apologize when wrong, and move on.
There you go.
And I don't mean, like, apologize and move on. What I mean is that, you know, once you've made your made peace, you have to forward, that you shouldn't stay stuck in it. And certainly I'm one who can, you know, speak for that.
Yeah, Jill, you should be pretty much an authority on it. But the truth is, a personality is such that she really is able, for whatever reasons, to move on. I mean, not everybody can. And the problem is people get stuck. And when they get stuck in a place, very often they stay there. They cannot really get out of there. Where are you anyway, may I ask?
I'm in Dallas, Texas.
Ooh,
you're in the great state of Texas.
Yes.
That's
yes,
a challenge all by itself.
It's wonderful. It's been wonderful here. So
really?
Yes.
Good. I'm glad to hear that.
Yeah, it's been
strange,
wonderful.
Strange, but okay. You have our former president, right? Is he there?
George W. Bush lives in Preston Hollow neighborhood here in Dallas. Mm-hmm.
Is that, yeah, okay.
Yeah,
there's another hollow somewhere. Hollow in some other place in the middle of the Appalachian Mountains. I wonder if that's similar.
There's
just
so many duplications in names, so it's kind of interesting. But it's wonderful here to be in Dallas, and wonderful to have the show in bringing people like you guys, making a positive difference in our global community. And that's what I enjoy about my show, because being able to just having this wonderful conversation.
I really appreciate that, Johnny.
You,
I think you're amazing.
You know, blog radio is relatively new. How do you evaluate how many people are listening? How does it work? Because I've done quite a few of them.
I've done a total of about 60-plus shows, and I have to date about 11,000 people that listen to my show.
That's terrific. Good for you. How do you get the word out there?
Through Blog Talk, as well as my blogging and everything else. I don't do this full-time, which I hope to do one day. I'm not.
What do you do full-time?
I have a business here in Dallas Tech that sells architectural antiques, custom-made water features, architectural bronzes, and everything else. I'm also an author. My book actually just won the Mom's Choice Award, Gold Award, in the category of inspirational and motivational. So I'm really excited about it.
Congratulations.
Thank
That's
you.
Thrilling. Good for
Thank you
too.
About that. Yeah, it was quite interesting. I wrote a book about my relationships with my nine moms.
Whoa. Go back. you knew what you were
going to do. Nine moms?
Yes.
You knew I was going to stop you, right? What is that about?
Well, it's about motherly love. It's about my relationship with my nine moms. I was adopted at birth in Malaysia, and then when I came here to go to college at LSU, in the course of living here, I met eight other wonderful women who, in the course of living here, became my other mom.
Wow.
Yeah. And in your book, you talk about that, because you have your other mom, too,
well,
growing
Cookie.
Up. That's right.
Yeah,
we don't
have
call
our
her aunt.
Mom, but yeah, she is like our second mother. She always,
yeah.
You know,
and no, we also had Ethel, Jill. We talk about Ethel.
Oh, yes. Sorry.
There you go. So I think the people that play into our lives, I think, make a big difference. So my book is actually about showcasing unconditional love and about motherly love. And it's about a tribute to all the moms all over the world. And so my show is about ordinary people doing extraordinary things, especially mothers.
Oh, how nice.
How nice of you. That's
yeah,
really...
so, you know, the funny thing about it, I started out of, like everybody else, I guess, from a guy standpoint of view, out of selfishness, because I was trying to preserve my mom's food recipes. And in the course of putting all together, I never could get it off the ground. And had I actually ended up just writing a cookbook, I would have left out three of my moms because I didn't really care very much for their food recipes.
I got it.
That's funny.
So I was spiritually inspired, so I finished it in 9 months. So voila, I got From My Mama's Kitchen, Food for the Soul, Recipes for Living. And because all of our conversations, our heartfelt conversations, turn out to be in the kitchen, and the kitchen is the heart and soul of the, you know, the family, so to speak. So that's what
it's the soul of the house. It really is. Yeah.
And you guys talk about food. You talk about celebrate, about family. I love the fact that you included a bunch of photos in the middle of the book.
That's Lisa, I know.
And thanks to our publisher, Penguin, because they were so generous to allow it. You know, it's not cheap to do that. And
that's right.
You know, because of, I guess, our relationships, without our photo. Well, first of all, for me, I have no memory. So without my photos, I won't remember anything. And actually, as I'm sitting here, I have like 30,000 photos in my computer. And if I don't start deleting like 10,000, I have no more space. So, yes, photos are really important to our family.
Fantastic.
Well,
let's talk about this. Let's move on and talk about one of the things that is very, very important, which is very interesting, because in any family relationship, you know, and this is a funny thing because you all brought it up, and it happens in my culture too, that mom is always the matchmaker. So let's talk about that.
Well, we love matchmaking. We really love matchmaking.
Well, I think that's an inherent part of a motherly's affection to seeing that her children marry well, and sharing that kind of knowledge, or I don't know the other word for it, interference, if you will, with other families. I mean, why shouldn't they have the joy and the happiness and the ecstasy that we do? So we try to transmit it to as many people as possible. It's like the flu. Mm-hmm. We want to get it around to as many people as we can.
That's a nice way of thinking about marriage.
You like that? I didn't say marriage. I said romance. I was.
Even
marriage
better.
Is a different
Even
story.
Better.
Well, yeah, well, listen, you know, it's a bad day. Now, in all seriousness, mothers, really, this is what we do. We nurture. Mothering is nurturing. That is the real word of mother. A true mother is a nurturer. And what you do when the children start to grow up, you nurture and continue to do so. You want them to be happy. You want them to have a good life. You want them to succeed in their profession or their way of life. And part of it is a family, to go out and build a family of their own and to have children and meet a nice guy or girl and be happy. That's what moms want. What do they want? They want to nurture their kids. They want to nurture their lives so they become happy and fulfilled in life. That's basically
the Well, you want
the
best
truth.
For your child. I know that one thing for sure. You want the best for your child, and you want someone to take over your position, basically, because you'll do anything for your child.
Well, that really is the truth. A mother's instinct, at least in my part of the world where I come from, the mother's instinct is extraordinarily strong for family and for their children. Absolutely. That's really quite serious. I take that very seriously. Yes, very much so.
Well, Jill, what's your philosophy about matchmaking?
Oh, I'm a professional. I should have a degree. I actually, this weekend, have two people I would like to fix up who I picked up along the way. I really should keep it in my iPhone, like a list, because I forget.
Uh-huh.
I forget who's in and who's out as far as availability. And I'm very, very, very close with Patty Stanger, the millionaire, very successful television, you know, host, star of Millionaire Matchmaker. And in fact, she's in New York City right now at the end of filming her third season. And I did a matchmake, though not for marriage. I matchmake my mother with her mother. Could you imagine Yenta plus Yenta's mothers?
We're having lunch together. They're coming here in about a half hour.
So Pam,
is that right today?
I swear to God, they're coming. Mel and Rhoda are coming to my house, and Daddy is going to be home, and we're going to lunch at Woodfield. Absolutely.
Matchmaking isn't always left to men and women. I also find it in relationships with people and also work. I'm always constantly trying to connect people for, you know, whether jobs, and it's not necessarily a job at my level. I'm more interested in introducing people, meaning I'm not, you know, if somebody needs a job, I don't really do that as well as if somebody says to me, I'm looking for a company that does X, Y, Z, do you know someone? And I try to introduce to the right person, and I enjoy it. I do, you know, I don't do it for profession. I do it because I love it.
Well, it's part of networking, and it's about getting to know people. And I think that's a big difference because a lot of times, in all actuality, too, is being discovered by the right people. And
that's very true.
And you're never an expert in everything. You need to partner up with someone else to help you to get to the next level of success.
I'm sorry, that's sugar because the FedEx man is here.
She goes into a cataclysmic.
She
goes absolutely insane when that poor guy comes to the house.
That's right.
It really
doesn't
make his day for him. I got to tell you, can develop a complex.
I know.
That's quite all right, ladies. That's quite all right. In my last year's interview, this was interesting, if nothing else, to kind of let you all know, I spoke with Allegra Houston, and her little boy came into the room and joined the conversation. So it was very, very interesting.
Well, you know, you never know who's around. That's the thing about being on the phone, right?
This is a family show. That's what it's all about. It's about
family.
I think real life, real situation. That's what it's all about. Now, Jill, you talk about in your book, being a Jewish mother, it's, you know, you're always teaching. So tell us a little bit about that. How does that concept applies to everyone else?
About teaching?
Yes.
I don't know what you're referring to exactly.
You're constantly teaching people because you're always on the lookout in terms of sharing your thoughts, sharing your...
Yeah, well, you know what? I get that from my mother because my mother was actually... a teacher, and sometimes I think maybe I did miss my calling because I do try. I do like to teach people whatever it is that they want to know. It's just by nature. It's not something that I do consciously. But I, like, for example, it's not even, I don't like to use the word teaching, but even this weekend I had house guests, and you know, I really enjoyed taking them on a tour of the Hamptons and showing them the different parts and why people like certain things better than others. And you know, I just, that's not teaching, but I like sharing those. You know, I like you know, showing people things for the first time. I do.
It's very interesting.
I love children because they're so, you know, they don't know anything yet.
And I love dogs. What kind of?
I love dogs too.
I know you
love dogs more.
You know, it's amazing to me. Jill is truly a people person. So is Lisa, but they do it in different ways. They're both people, and they're not necessarily a lot of them. In other words, a lot of people that you meet along the way, they're happier reading a book, or they're happy being. I've met a lot of people say, you know, I like to be alone.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I enjoy myself, or I enjoy being alone, or I don't. There aren't that many people that love people. Jill loves people. She loves to be surrounded. She's a marvelous, marvelous hostess. What she should have been is a person that, you know, specializes. In other words, she's a party person. She could give, she's like Pearl Mester. Even though maybe you never heard of her. She was way past, you know, way before your time. But Pearl Mester was a famous lady in my time, older, that she was like a Washington hostess with the mostest, and they had a play about her. Jill could have been that because she loves more. More is more. And she loves to party, and she loves
people.
And
meeting more people.
Yeah, people, and having parties with people, and mingling with people. She loves it. I clam up. If I'm in as garrulous as I can be, when I'm in a large group of people I don't know, I will not talk.
And me, I have all these little tricks that I use on networking.
It's unbelievable. It's fabulous.
I
admire it.
A book on networking. But I do. I think that the first thing, especially if you're shy, you know, if you use your hand as a tool and you walk around the room and you literally stick your hand in front of you to guide you and walk up to everybody you can, almost make a game with yourself and introduce yourself and say, "Hi, my name is Jill. What's your name?" Yeah. Immediately, once you make physical contact with the hand, it's like you're friends.
Is she not Carmen Russo?
And nobody, I've never seen anyone not take the, actually, it's like a piece of gum. If you give everyone a piece of gum, who's not going to take it? Although I actually have to say there was one person who didn't want. And I was just sort of playing a game with them, a test. But I don't know anybody who will not take a hand back if someone extends the hand to them. I'll do it as a game in the car. I'll be like, "Watch this," and I'll stick my hand in front of them. And immediately they take it. They don't even know what's going on, and they take it. They can't help but shake back. And once you make that contact, it just makes everything else so easy. And it's such a simple thing. It really is. People should try it if they're shy. It'll help.
Well, you have that outgoing personality. It's a natural for you. But I can understand what your mom is saying, because a lot of times some people are situationally shy. They're not necessarily shy.
That's great. That's a great line. Situationally, that is exactly true.
Yeah.
Exactly.
So we just need to kind of have that break the ice moment.
That is,
and
really
then
true.
Hey, you know,
and you don't stop, right?
That's right. There you go.
Very good. That was really good, Johnny. That's really well put, because that is exactly verbally what happens.
Yeah, sometimes it's very, very different. Well, what's your type of personality, Lisa?
I'm sorry, Johnny. One more time. I just didn't hear what you just said.
Personality.
Yeah, what type of personality? You know, Jill is really outgoing, the one that sort of initiate conversations, that initiate people. I know your mom and I pretty much share the same situation, in the sense that, you know, we're kind of a situationally shy person, that we kind of have sometimes we need to have people break the ice, and then we will take it home, so to speak. How about you?
I think I am a pretty outgoing person, but I don't have the energy that my sister has to keep going with parties. But when I'm at the party and I make myself go, I think I do pretty well. I like people a lot. Mommy says that I have a little bit of a problem that she's noticed, which is that I make very good, deep connections with people, and then very frequently they think they're closer to me in a way than even I think. It's not that I don't like them. It's just that I have a very fulfilling but very, very, very busy kind of, you know, day. And sometimes I think I hurt people's feelings without meaning to, because they think that they're very close to me. And it's not that I don't like them. It's just that I don't have the time to develop the depth of friendships with a lot of people today. But I like people.
Let me say this.
I loved running for politics, Johnny, when I did it. I loved campaigning. I loved shaking people's hands.
Right.
I mean, I'm on the radio, and I'm on talk radio, not, you know, jock FM music, because I like to know what makes other people tick. It's really important to me.
Hard, put her on. You can get her through the computer. I do every day. I get her on from 4 to 6.
LiveAlisaRadio.com.
Yeah.
No, Live
She's
Alisa.
Got a fabulous program.
What is it again? Lisa Wexler Show. Lisa Wexler Show.
You can find it on that's right.
And nothing is sacrosanct. I mean, she takes on the politics. She takes on everything.
I trade places with my sister. It's so funny because it's such an illusion. Lisa thinks I'm so busy. How do I do it all? It's
such an illusion.
It's a pretty good illusion. It's an illusion. I go, and then I burn. Like, I've been on hiatus, you know, now for a while, and even though I still get to run into doing things, and I'm happy to do them. I'm trying to not. My sister hasn't stopped for like 2 years, except for a week vacation.
That's true.
I mean, she's on it. It's a grind, daily radio.
It is.
Every day, 4 to 6. Doesn't matter if her daughter needs a doctor. Doesn't matter if her husband has any. Doesn't matter. She can't do it. I mean, and that's pretty. You know, most people have a flexible job where, you know, if they're sick, or Lisa can't be sick. I mean, all these things.
That's true.
When Lisa loses her voice, well, that's when I come in. Lisa calls me.
Right.
She knows I can take it over. But I don't know how my sister does it. And I'm only, I mean, she's a one-woman show. She doesn't have, like, a back-office team. So she books. She has to find her guests, book her guests, get her radio ads. I don't know if you do advertising in blog radio, do you?
Yes, some people do. Unfortunately, like I say, again, I'm doing this part-time, which I eventually would like to do this full-time as the book and everything else take off, that I like to really pursue From My Mama's Kitchen to the next level of success from speaking engagements, second book, and everything else. So that's what I want to do.
Everything that comes with it. But it's, you know, so I have so much respect for people who do anything daily on a regular, even television. And the added part stress of television daily is the hair and makeup.
Oh, it's huge.
Lisa, if she doesn't want to get dressed, go
Thank God.
That's right.
Nobody'll know when you have a daily television show. I don't know how these women do it. I give them so much respect. And the ones who have multiple, like a Joy Behar, who's on The View, and then she runs over to HLN. She does two responsible huge shows a day, and they're not always on the same schedule, so she could be on vacation with one, and the other one's not. She doesn't even get a break. Enormous amount of respect. I think I have it much easier than Lisa, although she thinks the contrary.
Coming back to you, Gloria, one of the things that we talk about is about relationships and everything else, and what I like about it is that you have a list of things on how to keep a man after you're married, and I thought it was quite interesting.
Really?
Getting him is the easier part.
Well, you know, I've been very lucky because I have a husband who is
a saint.
Let's not go that much. I mean, thankfully he's not here at the moment to hear himself being deified. But the truth of the matter is he has a very laid-back personality.
Mm-hmm.
And you can't have two Glorias in one room very long. It's got to be a Gloria and a Saul. I'm trying to be kind and very, very, you know, careful in my language. You really can't because you could really have a suicide attempt there. So what happens is I give him the perks and the jerks, and he kind of gives me the sedation, and it's good. It works. It really does. Very rarely does Saul really get angry, and I mean angry in the sense of angry. I think I've seen him in 52 years, maybe 4 times. He is just a really nice guy. And the thing about Lisa is that she's very much like her father.
Mm-hmm.
And people gravitate towards Saul, and they do think he walks on water.
Mm-hmm.
But the truth of the matter is that his attitude, his body language, and the way he speaks emits that.
Mm-hmm.
However, underneath it, most of the time, he really doesn't care.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, he doesn't get, quote, involved the way I do.
Mm-hmm.
I get involved on a very deep level. He doesn't, so he doesn't get hurt that often.
Mm-hmm.
He cares about very few people in his life.
Mm-hmm.
And the people that he cares deeply about. His
mm-hmm.
children, his family, his wife. He cares a great deal. But people as a whole think that they love him, that he cares. He doesn't. He likes them. He likes them. But if he didn't see them again, that all right, not the end of the world. I mean, that's really Saul. But people don't know that because he walks around with such a lackadaisical and caring attitude and quiet and soothing that he's just adored.
Mm-hmm.
I envy it sometimes. I really do, because they just gravitate towards him. I
well,
mean
it's a different level of caring, because there are people that you can care so much, but yet ultimately it's up to that individual to make that shift. If they can't make that shift, it's irrelevant. And so in the end, you're hurting yourself. So I can understand and relate to where he's coming from. Not that you don't want to get involved completely, and you're right, because
he tries not to get too involved. No, he really does. He makes a concerted effort to uninvolve himself on a lot, on many levels. Really, I mean that, because he really, for whatever reason, it's really self-protection. He doesn't want to get agitated.
Sure.
He doesn't want to get unnecessarily hurt, as you said.
Right.
I think it's
it's
very insightful of you to say that. But it really is true. It's a self-protective mechanism, but whatever it is, it works. I wish I could be that way. I'm not. I take care after my father. My father's temperament was entirely different. We're more fiery. We're more passionate. We feel things more deeply, but at the same time, we get hurt more deeply. You can't have it all. Everybody thinks you can have it all. You really can't. You have one side, it goes up. The other side goes down.
Well, you all have that natural nurturing instinct. And from
that
instinct,
has nothing to do. That's a separate issue. That's not
that's
what I'm talking
issue.
About.
That's a
separate
issue.
Yeah, of course it is.
Yeah.
That's a separate issue. We're talking about, you know, friendships on a very superficial level.
Right.
We're not talking about caring deeply about the people that surround us. Our immediate family and their offspring, our family, if you will. That's a different issue. We're just talking about personal relationships as you
with
come
people.
Through life.
Right.
With people in general.
Well, how about you, Lisa? How's your take with people and relationship?
Well, I think that you know, I was very lucky, and so was Jill, because we actually observed a healthy marriage, and very few people get to do that, Johnny, today. I think one of the reasons that there are so many people getting married later is because you're having the first significant generation of people who are largely children of divorced households, and so they're a little bit more reluctant to commit, and they don't necessarily have the same role models. One of the things my parents always reminded us was that it was work, you know, that life was not all, you know, bells, whistles, and romance, and that you needed to sort of get back down and work. And then the other thing, which brings back around to the conversation you said earlier, is that my parents really lived with a sense of empathy for each other. They laugh and joke about it, but when the chips were down, my father is right there for my mother, and my mother is right there for my father, and that meant sacrifice. And that meant compromise, and that meant taking it easy, and a lack of selfishness when it counted. And, you know,
thanks
these
for
are character.
Thank
well, it's
you
true.
For that.
And these are character traits because of an overriding goal of keeping a family together. And I think that those are the real important things that they've taught me and Jill. You know, obviously, you know, we talk in the book about the non-negotiables, crazy people doing crazy things, but in the everyday humdrum of life, you know, it's easy to say, this isn't the perfect person for me. I think I could be happier elsewhere. And because, you know, a lot of women have economic independence, that's what they do. A lot of my friends in their 40s and 50s, it's the women who are leaving the marriage.
Right.
But I
think
But I think our parents reminded us very often, you know, that in the long term and in the long run, a history together is something that's really important. If you still can retain a spark, if you can run away together for a weekend and still laugh and escape the humdrum everyday world, then you've got what it takes to move on. And in the end of your life, if you don't want to be alone and you want somebody to care for you, then it is about give and take. And I think that I hope that these are the lessons that I can transmit to my kids. I don't know. I feel like I'm fighting an overall culture and society that doesn't teach these lessons. But these are the ones that my parents taught me.
But those lessons come from the home. You can't rely on society to teach that to anyone, basically. And you brought up a very interesting question. One of the things I really enjoyed reading about your book, it reminded me so much about growing up where we eat as a family.
Yep.
Every day. We have that family time. That's the. And what's interesting is that even in my situation was we learn about family tree through conversations at the dinner table.
Right.
And that's about the only time that we learn all this kind of stuff. So
true.
I enjoy that very much.
But if you don't have the dinner table, you miss a lot, and McDonald's isn't an adequate substitute.
Precisely.
But you have a problem now, Lisa.
I've got to step off because I've got another interview.
Yes,
a half-hour show. So, ladies, can you handle it?
Well, I guess so, sweetheart.
All right, I love
Jill,
you.
Jill, thank you so much for being on the show.
Thank you so much for having us.
We will work this thing out, and I'll get back with you with regards to what we want to do in the future. I'd like to get you guys back possibly
our
during...
Our pleasure. We'd like to. We'd like to be back. It would be fun.
All right,
I think
y'all
have a wonderful show. Thank you.
Bye.
What I'd like to do is to get y'all back, I think, during the holiday season.
What holiday season are you talking about? Christmas?
Christmas and Hanukkah.
Oh, okay. Well,
yeah.
By that, they'll be down here. I don't know if Jill will, but
down.
Lisa will be here during Christmas, and maybe, well, Jill may be, because Christmas is our anniversary. So they really try very hard to be with us then, and then she goes off with Bobby and Allie and his family to an island for a week, and then they come back.
Fantastic.
But I think
around
Christmas would be fine, because I know Lisa is going to be down here, and we all try Christmas, because it's getting harder. I mean, I go up there for our Jewish holidays, but the truth of the matter is we're getting older now, and... it's getting harder and harder. It's not as easy as it was. Let me put it to you that way.
But family comes first, so which is kind of interesting. And I that's something that, you know, we'll work it out. Lisa, is that okay with you?
You mean to come back on?
Yes.
Sure.
Wonderful.
So you can put us on a different time if you wanted to blog it or whatever it is you do.
Yeah,
I don't know
so,
what blogging is, so I have no idea what
so,
you're
but
about.
I think you guys have some wonderful insights about family and about bonding and everything else. And I think that's what we need today in
we
understanding.
Certainly do.
And if we end up coming to Dallas, Johnny, we'll let you know.
Yeah, we may, we may have a book signing. Yeah, we may come. We may
We're doing a nationwide book tour, and we're booking up all over the country. We're doing one traveling event a month. So we're going to Dayton, Ohio. We're going to Dayton, Detroit, and Baltimore in the fall. We're thinking about Minneapolis, Pittsburgh. We're getting invitations from all over. We've gotten an invitation from El Paso. How far is El Paso from Dallas?
Very
El
far.
El Paso is very, very far because Texas is huge. Yeah.
Okay.
It's,
you really want to go to Houston or Dallas or even, you know what, I love the capital, Austin. I think Austin is
Austin
such
is
a...
Austin is beautiful.
Lisa, you were there.
I
at a
know,
radio
nice.
Conference.
Yeah, it was wonderful. It was really fun.
Yeah.
It's a beautiful city. I wouldn't mind going there, but El Paso is so far south, and it's nowhere near anything. Go to Mexico from there. I remember. I know where El Paso is. Well, it's true. How far is El Paso from the border?
It's a little bit further. El Paso is a little bit north of the border, but very far away from Dallas.
Yeah. Oh, I see. Okay.
You want to be in a cosmopolitan place, and you want to be in a place that reads books and you know, listens to people and is a little bit more academic, and you'll find that in Dallas, you'll find it in Houston, you'll find it in Austin.
But you guys have so much to offer because the things that you talk about are applicable in everyday life, because what are the things is that what we need is to basically be a better us first before we can contribute to the family. And I think that was what you guys bring to the table.
Well, I think you are, your blogging, the blogosphere, or what are they calling it these days, is what is for the future. And I hope that the people that enter it have your kind of heart and have your ability to reach out into a different sphere and try to educate and try to help people learn how to educate themselves so they become more aware of what's around them and not to become sheep and follow people just because it's blind and they're lazy and they can't figure out things for themselves. People follow people now blindly. It's
well,
like
it's
everybody's waiting for the Messiah to come. Well, I don't think it's coming around the corner.
Right.
And I just think I'm very frightened for for my grandchildren and for their children. I really am, because I don't think the United States is going to be the country that, even when Lisa was young, was the same country. I think we're falling into a really bad situation. And unless we get somebody, I thought Obama would be the savior. I really did. I wanted him to succeed. He really fell into a really, really bad deal. He was, on every side of him were big, big, big problems. I shouldn't even say are. And I don't know if one man can really solve the ills that were put upon us, because there's so many and they're so great and they're just getting bigger and bigger. I don't even know if Moses could do it. I don't even know if Solomon could do it. I don't know. I really don't.
Well, until
we take
ownership of ourselves, and that's what the problem is. And a lot of times people don't realize that. I think all the presidents have good intentions, but the handlers are the one that kind of, in a way, mess things up. And that's a sad deal because, and there's a tremendous amount of polarization. And so, and it comes back with the nuclear family. And I think, and I'm very, very glad to be able to contribute to that because that's what my mom's taught me. And what you guys are doing, sharing your concept, your recipes for living, you know, studying one family at a time, because one family builds a community builds a state, a nation, or whatever that you
I thank you for those thoughts, and I have to tell you, I truly appreciate it, and I hope you become very successful in what you do because you're a positive person, and you have positive ideas, and the world needs more people like you.
Well, it's I think...
No, really, I really mean that. I'm not saying it just because you're on the phone and I have to say I wouldn't say it otherwise. You don't know me. But my daughter does, and she knows I would never say it if I didn't mean it. You're a very positive person. You're an upbeat person. And the world needs more people like you. You're not down on people. You don't criticize and you don't condemn. Am I right, Lisa?
Mm-hmm.
Blogging has two faces. One of them is hateful and awful.
Sure. Absolutely.
And it's destructive. Look, I killed that girl, that beautiful, beautiful young girl,
right,
had to commit suicide. I mean, it's like a nightmare. Mm-hmm. I never saw anything, the meanness that comes out of people spewing this hate and vileness. Young people to be so mean. I was bullied. I think every person I've ever known was bullied. But there's all degrees.
That's right.
And now it's gotten so out of control because of the blog and because of the ability of the internet, that it's really quite frightening for parents. You want to know about the single most dangerous responsibility that parents are going to have?
Mm-hmm.
If they're going to bring up those teenagers from 11 to 15 or 17 on those computers and watch every single thing that they do, lest anything befall them. Because the danger of that computer on those teenagers is devastating.
Then again, when the children were growing up around you, you were involved with Lisa's life. You were involved with Jill's
Absolutely.
Life.
Absolutely. Well, they didn't have computers. It was easy for us. I'm not going to give myself any plaudits for that. We helped them do their homework. In Lisa's case, I never did any homework with her because she was so academic and so self-sufficient. I was very lucky. I mean, I never had to look at her homework because she was an A student. She always was, and that was a pleasure. My mother used to say, if I had Lisa, I'd have 10 kids. I'd be writing books on how to bring up children. Well, she was very easy to bring up. She was a very, very wonderful little girl, very very proud, and very she is what she is now, and she was when she was then. It's no different. She's extraordinary woman.
Do you think the background, the culture, the not necessarily religious, but the spiritual values, because one of the things that I've read a few years back, and this is very interesting, I just want to share this with you, is God is Above by Rabbi David Cooper. And, of course, that book is a little bit different. It's about the study of Kabbalah and the practice of mystical Judaism and all that. But it's a wonderful book because I tell you this, because the reason why it was very interesting to me was it tied in all the cultures of the world, because the significance of number seven days, those kind of things.
Numerical. What is that word, Lisa?
Numerology.
That's what they have. That's what the Kabbalah is about, numerology.
But
it's very, very secret.
Right, but it's the very basis of culture, the tightness, the respect of adults. It's just a very kind of a, you know, you have a foundation there. And somehow, somewhere along the line, all this has been slowly but surely dissolved.
Eroded away. It's been eroded away. Right.
So it's a little bit different. And
because people don't hang in anymore. They just leave. Just get up and leave. The husband leaves. The wife leaves. Whatever it is. They just say, you know what? I've had it. Goodbye. They don't. You know, marriage has ups and downs. But there has to be, of course, feeling. You know, at the underlying part of it, there has to be feeling for the other person. Okay? You have to love the other person, at least like the other person, in order to stay with him, number one. I don't know the reasons these people get married. Maybe it's fear, loneliness, whatever it is. But if you are marrying someone that you respect, and you marry someone that's going to be your life partner that you like, L-I-K-E, you can live with that person and go through an awful lot. If you love that person but don't like them, you're in deep trouble.
You guys were, when y'all got married, I mean, y'all were matchmake, right, to meet your husbands?
Well, I met my husband
blind
on a blind date.
Blind date,
which is kind of like a matchmaking thing.
Yeah, in a way.
Yeah,
I was
right.
Set up by this guy. Yeah, absolutely, in a way.
Yeah.
That I don't know how, young people now have a big problem, which we did not have. In our circle, and I'm only speaking now for our circle, I'm not talking about anybody else's, but the middle class Jewish family. And I mean middle class. I don't mean the upper class. I'm not talking about wealthy. I'm talking about just a middle class person making a decent living would have certain hotels and certain places to go where they would meet other families like themselves with children. And there were places that were called the Catskill Mountains. I don't know if you've ever heard of it. The Catskill Mountains are an area where most of your comedians in later life came out of. The Jewish comedians that you saw on TV, all at one time were at these hotels in the Catskills. The Concord, Grossinger's, and the Neverly. They were just a whole group of fabulous hotels. And parents would take their girls, specifically their girls, and guys would go there with their parents, without their parents, and they would meet. And they would pretend they weren't, but that's what this is all about. And when you ran out of guys, you yourself, when you were old enough, used to go there alone. And you met other guys. They were Jewish.
Mm-hmm.
And they were, you know, usually educated and of the same kind as you were. It was very easy. Now, there are bars. There's the internet. You don't even know who these people are. You don't know what they are, where they are. It's very, very dangerous and very hard.
Mm-hmm.
And if you don't have a matchmaker like a Jill...
Mm-hmm.
or someone like them, how do you meet them? I don't know how they meet anymore. I really don't. I haven't a clue. They come to me. Sometimes they ask me on the internet, you know, to give advice.
Right.
They want to meet a guy. I said, learn how to play golf. Go where the guys are. Well, but it's true. I mean, you have to go. Where do the guys go? They go to play golf, right?
Right.
You're
right.
Not going to go to a bar and play pool.
Right.
I mean, that's not really the most advantageous thing to do.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, I don't know how to advise them. I really don't, because I come from a different kind of era. Lisa might be able to tell you. I can't tell you. I don't know.
Now, Lisa, you are a matchmaker, too, so let's get a little input from you.
Well, I mean, I know Jill loves day date and stuff like that. You know what's interesting about these sites?
Mm-hmm.
They purport to go to different communities. I have a friend, a Jewish girl, who signed up on J-Date. And
mm-hmm.
she was upset because a lot of non-Jewish guys were on it, that kind of thing. Like, it was very interesting.
Yeah.
Because she felt like they weren't getting why she was on that site. She could have gone on Match.com or eHarmony if her faith wasn't important to her, but her faith was important to her, and that's why she was on J-Date. She sort of felt it was a little bit of, like, not fair. You know what I mean? Like, not playing by the rules. But, you know, that's life. But, you know, that's her, whatever. But, no, I think it's about getting out of your room. I really do. I think I see with my own kids and that whole generation, I feel really bad for them because Mommy is right. The constructs that used to exist, the actual places where you can meet and greet. And Mommy was really lucky because when she grew up, men knew how to dance, you know, and they'd grind and do disgusting things that you want to run away on the dance floor. You can't even look at them.
They don't
Johnny,
know
am
how
I right?
to dance.
Can you even look at that honestly?
No.
Can you compare
it's not dancing to me. That's not dancing. That's not even music. I don't know what that is.
I'm just saying there's no sort of civilized way. And I happen to think that our culture, the pendulum has swung so far to the place of no rules, like what Mom said before, and hooking up. I think girls are at a huge disadvantage. They think they have to sleep with men in order to get asked out on a second date. They don't understand that they can say no and that they should say no. They don't have any self-respect. I think all the rules have gone out the window, and I think that explains a lot of the attraction to the fundamentalist forms of religion in the world. Because people see our way and they say, well, that doesn't work. That's awful. That doesn't give women any protection. That's not civil. That's not the way I want to be. So maybe I should go under a veil or join a Hasidic community and live in a place where the rules are easy and they're expected. And as long as I follow them, my life is consistent and safe.
Right. And people are today, too, they're looking for instant gratification, though. And,
well,
and
some
it's
people
all about,
are. Some people are, but there's no in between. That's my point.
That's right.
There's no in between.
Right. That's right. And it's very, very true. You know, one of my late moms was a ballroom dance instructor, so she taught me ballroom dancing 12 years ago.
Oh, so you know the music that used to be. You know, when I hear
Compete. I used to perform. I still perform in some ways. I've ballroom danced.
Really? How fabulous.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
And it was funny because back then I didn't want to tell anybody because they think you're conflicted, you know, being a guy.
Oh, that's funny.
But now,
when I hear the music, the dance
right.
music of years ago, I hate to, you know, say those things like I used to say to my mother, oh, Mom, please, for God's sakes, I can't stand listening to what you used to do in the olden days. But the truth of the matter is, there is no dance music anymore. People don't know how to literally dance together.
Right.
The only time they do is when they do the real ballroom, you know, contests and stuff.
Right.
But the average guy and girl who go out, they don't even know what kind of music it is to dance to. A regular foxtrot, a regular, just a plain, they don't know how to do it. They don't know how to waltz. I mean, they think, what's a waltz? What is that? It's like talking Greek or something. And it's a shame because it used to be beautiful music and with great musicians. Really, one had nothing to do with the other. I don't know why
That's
one
right.
had to die for the other had to live. Why can't you have both kinds, the new kind and the
mm-hmm.
old kind?
Mm-hmm.
But no, one had to die for the other to live. It's too bad. Really?
Well, it's gone through so many transformations, but the good news is it is coming back, and people are focusing on it. And
really?
There's an underground movement to whereby a lot of the ballroom dancers right now, the ones that I know, my friends, are actually getting involved with teaching ballroom dancing at the grade level.
I am so happy to hear you say that. You have no idea. I think it's fabulous.
Because when you do that, you start teaching mannerism. You start teaching cotillion. You start to teach a lot of things. Responsibility.
You can also teach stature.
Precisely.
It's marvelous for your body. It's marvelous for your spine. It is a fabulous, fabulous thing for your body.
Mm-hmm.
Ballroom dancing really, first of all, it's very strenuous. These people who really do it. They work out like Olympic athletes. Do you understand the things that they really do and the twists and the turns and the body movement?
Very much so.
It's enormous.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Anyway, I am going to get off the phone and see my dear friend who's coming, who I don't know, but I'm looking forward to meet. And she sounds like such a lovely, lovely, lovely lady. And she has a very nice daughter. And I'm looking forward to a lovely lunch with her. And I've been very happy talking to you. It is so nice to reach out and hear somebody's warm and kind voice, and you have it. And I wish you the best of luck and good health and happiness in your life.
Thank you very much. And I'll be in touch with Lisa and try to put this thing together at y'all's convenience, of course. And we'll try to get together again sometime, whether in November or December, whatever works for you guys. And like to have you guys come back. Enjoy this conversation about family and sharing your experiences. I appreciate that very much, Laura. Thank you.
Oh,
very
I appreciate
much.
It too. Lisa, will you stay on? I'm going to hang up now, okay?
We're about to get off here, too.
Okay, thank you so much.
Thank you.
I'll speak to you again. Bye.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Okay,
bye
Lisa.
Now.
Take
yes.
care. Bye-bye.
By the way, to all our listeners, thank you for being with us. You can follow Lisa, Jill, and Gloria's latest happenings by going to www.secretsofajewishmother.com. Please join me next Tuesday morning. My guest will be Jenny Ray. She is a Native American medicine woman and a descendant of the medicine ways of the Inyan Oyati, the Stone Nation. Please join Jenny and I as we will be discussing the history of stone medicine, its connection to our Inamaka, Mother Earth, and the reconnection of today's wellness practitioners to this ancient art of healing. For additional information about this show, future shows, and for my recipes for living, please go to FromMyMamasKitchen.com. You can also follow me on Twitter at Twitter.com/FMMK Talk Radio. Thank you for listening and have a great week.